Welcome to the podcast of National Institute of Chemistry. You can relax and pour yourself a favorite drink from a nearby Erlenmeyer flask, beaker, cup, because the days of complex scientific reading are behind us. We are here to provide you with engaging and accessible explanations of the latest discoveries. In this episode, I'm hosting Dr. Petra Utrosa from the Department of Polymer Chemistry and Technology at the National Institute of Chemistry, who will introduce us to how molecules can be activated by light to become acidic or basic. Hi, Petra.
Hi.
Thank you for accepting the invitation to record this podcast. Now I'm curious, what inspired you to explore the world of chemistry? And what excites you the most about your research?
Yes, first of all, thank you for having me here. I've always been very curious about everything. So I guess that was the main thing that was inspiring and trying to understand the nature, the world, brought me to chemistry. And I find it especially fascinating that we can manipulate reactions, make new things, and even use light to conduct some experiments and reactions.
Yeah, the chemistry is very applicable in many fields. So
yes, exactly.
Yeah, this is a very nice topic to explore. And in this article that you recently published, we are discussing the results of collaboration between researchers from the National Institute of Chemistry, Slovenia, and Queensland University of Technology, Australia, titled Wavelength-Dependent Activation of Photoacids and Bases. The article was published in Chemistry, a European journal. And the expert opinion on this work was provided by Assistant Professor Daryl Yi from the Laboratory for the Chemistry of Materials and Manufacturing at EPFL in Lausanne, Switzerland.
So photoacids and photobases are used extensively in many areas of science and technology. And we've always operated under the assumption that these compounds are the most active when we expose it to the wavelength of light that corresponds to their absorption maxima. However, this new work by Petra and co-workers shows that this is not always true. Photoacids and photobases can be just as, or in some cases more active, at wavelengths that are not at the absorption maxima. And this is important work because instead of spending a lot of resources to try and design new molecules that could be more effective, this work shows that we can simply attempt to use a different wavelength of light to increase the reactivity. This is great work, so congrats again, Petra and team.
Petra, could you please further describe the research field that this work touches on or could be applied to?
Yes, so it directly relates to photochemistry. So the main thing of this paper was investigation of photochemical reactions of a photobase or a photoacid. But this is indirectly related to some other topics that we are currently researching at the Institute. So in particular, it is related to biocompatible and biodegradable materials.
Yeah, nice. So because these materials then apply to many different fields, wherever the materials are needed.
Yes, exactly.
Even to medicine, right?
Yes, it is very much the main idea for those materials to be used in regenerative medicine or some other biomedical applications.
Very nice to have more precise medicine and new tissues and stuff like that,
yes.
Probably.
And while this is still perhaps, we are not quite there yet, and me personally, I'm not working with the biomedical applications, but we are developing the chemistry. So the very basic, the very first steps that are required for further investigations that may at some point bring us closer to tissue engineering, for example.
Yeah, this is very much needed. Of course, the basic, sometimes we forget how important it is that the basic research, how much basic research has to be done before something comes to the applications or practice. And in this work, what would you say are the main characters of this article? What are the main topics?
I would point out light and the photoactive compounds. So to explain a bit why I see light as the main character, so to say. Light is considered to be like a wave and therefore has a certain wavelength. To say it simply, light has a certain color, but also it has a certain intensity, and all of this relates to the energy that light has. And in some cases, molecules can absorb this light. Not every light, it depends on the properties of the molecule, but if the molecule is able to absorb light and its energy, it can undergo some reaction simply because of the light. So we don't have to add another compound, another chemical, but we can simply illuminate a photoactive compound. And photoactive compounds that are of my interest are photobases and photoacids. So to briefly explain, a photobase is a molecule that is not yet a base. So if we look at the molecule itself, it is neutral. But once we irradiate it with an appropriate light, the molecule can decompose and release a base. So base is probably something that our listeners are familiar with.
So it changes the pH of the solution.
Yes, exactly. So we put the photobase in a solution. The pH will be neutral. Once we illuminate it, if it is a photobase that we are talking about, the pH is going to increase after illumination. If it had been a photoacid, it would be the opposite. So the pH would drop.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting topics. I didn't know that this can be done by light, for example, no? Usually in the reactions, we add already the acid or the base when needed, not to have the compound already in the reaction. And on the time that we wish to, we illuminate with the light and the pH of the solution changes, right?
Yes, exactly. This is the beauty of photochemistry, because it gives us temporal and spatial control. Mm-hmm. The temporal control means that we can have a solution inactive, not reacting, until we turn on the light. So we can decide when the reaction is going to happen. So when we turn on the light. But also this gives us the opportunity to control where the reaction is going to happen, because we can always illuminate only a part of our sample.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is the main beauty of photochemistry that is then further applicable in additive manufacturing. So for example, 3D printing.
Ah, very nice. Yes, because you put the light source, probably very small area, just targeted where you want the reaction to change.
Yes, and exactly. And to put it simply, by illuminating, for example, a shape of a, I don't know, cat, you get a material that is shaped like a cat, even though it was initially in a, I don't know, in a flask or whatever, and taking the volume or the shape of the flask it was in.
Interesting. This can be done with bases and acids. And what were the key motivations behind the research presented in this article? Why did you decide to work on that topic?
Yes, so as I have already mentioned a bit about biomedical applications, so the main idea behind our work were biomedical applications. So in particular, regenerative medicine, which means some preparation of some novel materials for tissue engineering. So finding a synthetic material that can be put into a human body, not be rejected, so it is biocompatible, and that can also biodegrade. But now to prepare such materials, first of all, we need something that is biocompatible and biodegradable to begin with. And one kind of materials are synthetic polypeptides. Mm-hmm. But if we want to prepare them in a certain shape, like, for example, a cat, we need to use light to have the control over the polymerization, so the reaction, when and where it will take place. But the thing is, using light to prepare polypeptide materials has not been investigated yet. So all of this brought me to this work that we are talking about, because we needed to investigate photoacids and photobases that can then be applied in preparation of synthetic polypeptides. So to give the listeners an idea, our governing idea, like the big goal that we see that will be probably maybe achieved in many years later, and probably not but by us, but other researchers, it is to make tissue engineering possible. But to get to that, we need to understand the basic chemistry first and then prepare the materials.
And how did the research begin? And how does the research look like? How do you research the photoacid bases and acids? And how does that look like in the laboratory physically? How do you do the experiments?
Okay, so every research, of course, begins with literature search and investigating the topic that you're going to work with. But in particular, for example, if I'm to describe a typical experiment that I did, so it was a preparation of a solution of a photobase, and keeping in mind that since the photobase was photoreactive, I had to keep all of this in the dark, so minimizing the ambient light, keeping the samples in dark boxes. And then I transferred my samples to a laser lab. So this is quite an interesting kind of laboratory, because everything needs to be in the dark. So all the equipment is dark, the walls are dark, there are no windows, so the light is really minimized. And then the sample can be irradiated using a laser. So I was using a type of tunable laser system where I could determine which wavelength of light I want to use to illuminate my sample.
So which color of
which
light?
Which color, yes, yeah. Exactly. And as the sample solution was irradiated and the base was being released, this affected the pH of the solution, which I then simply measured with a pH probe.
Mm-hmm. So to try to imagine very easily, it's like you have one flask where you have the solution, and then this laser looks like very pointed light, like these small lasers that we use for presentations, right?
Yes,
on the
exactly.
Public presentation, this red small light. But of course, you use much more precise and bigger equipment. And I also asked you to send us maybe some photos from your work. And this is exactly the photo you sent, right? How this laboratory and the stand with laser looks like.
Yes, what the listeners can see is a photo of the equipment. So there is this red box that is actually the laser system. And if you look closely, you can see like a violet colored beam of light going through some optics and then being projected into a sample.
What I remember from my work, also I worked a little bit with the microscopy and some lasers, was always this big sign, careful, there is a laser, careful with your eyes.
Yes, absolutely. The safety here is very, very important, because we are not talking about laser pointers for presentations, which are relatively safe. We can just use them without people going blind. But working with this type of lasers, which have very high energy, it is extremely important to have the right equipment. So we need to use appropriate safety goggles, never stare directly into the laser. So yeah, there are some dangers regarding this kind of work, but if you take every precaution, then nothing really bad can happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Once you work and you know how to work with it, you by default take care properly.
Yes,
and,
exactly.
Of course, later on, when these kind of materials can be applied in some 3D bioprinting or wherever, there already the machine has all these protections, so the user doesn't have to at the end point. So maybe if our listeners are scared, oh my God, if we will use these lasers to produce something, the people will be in danger.
Yeah, no worries. Of course. The lasers will only be used in the material preparation stage, which will be done by professionals who will take care of the safety precautions, I hope.
Absolutely. Let's go to the key results. So what are the main findings of your research?
The main finding was understanding the photoreactivity of this particular photobase and photoacid, and also showing that the analysis of the photoreactivity can be performed in a much simpler way than it has been previously done. Namely by measuring pH of the solution, since we are working with acids and bases.
Yeah, which is very nice because pH can be easily measured in the laboratory. We don't need special other machines.
Yes, exactly. It is something that nearly every laboratory will be able to use to evaluate the photoreaction of the photobase or the photoacid that they are using. I would also like to point out here that I was also hoping to find a combination of a photoacid and a photobase that would have reactivity at different wavelengths. So that would mean that I could mix both photoacid and a photobase. Mm-hmm. The system would be neutral. And then as I would, for example, turn on the blue light, the pH would drop. And then I would turn on, for example, green light, and the pH would go up again, and so on. So that was my main goal that I wanted to achieve. But unfortunately, I didn't in this case. Because the reactivity of the photoacids and photobases that were available was unfortunately not appropriate. But still, now
hopefully
I know...
Hopefully in the future.
Yes, exactly. Now I know how I can try to achieve that. And this would be really nice to have this wavelength selective pH tuning.
That would be a great idea, because now you have to choose either if you will put photoacid or photobase in the reaction, but
yes,
then you could put both and then decide, oh, now I want to lower pH, now I want to higher it back.
Yes, and
so
all of
forward.
This can simply be done by using light of different colors. Mm-hmm. And I find this really exciting that this is possible.
Yeah, great idea. In what ways have these results advanced the field? What are the key innovations that might be useful for other researchers?
Yeah, so this gives us an idea. If we want to use the specific photobase or a photoacid for a reaction, now we know exactly which wavelength is going to be the best to get the best results of the photoreaction. And where we can use that is in preparation of polypeptide materials that we are working on right now at the Institute. But also the importance of this work has also been recognized by some other researchers. For example, there has actually been this a report paper regarding the importance of photoactive molecules. And it specifically highlights the work in our paper that we are discussing right now. Because using photoacids and photobases is perhaps unconventional in the field of additive manufacturing, so 3D printing, but this now opens up the possibility of performing more reactions for 3D printing, which opens up preparation of materials of more of various compositions, different polymers. So it will also extend the possibilities of applications of 3D printed materials.
Amazing. So this knowledge really opens many new possibilities.
Yes, exactly.
Looking back, what would you have done differently in your research, or what would you advise other researchers not to do or what to do?
Well, looking back, I'd say that one of the important things is when you are trying to see if something is going to work. So you have this a very new idea that you want to investigate if it is plausible. Start with a simple, simple system. So even though you might want to have this perfect system, whatever it may be for your particular application, it might be difficult to investigate a complex system. So it's just better to start really at the basics, even though you know that they are not perfect for what you need.
Yeah, I believe that this is really important. We forget many times how simple things are important to start with. Many times we think research has to be very complicated and we have to think about so many different things and try so many different things and apply so many different things and so many techniques, and then it gets complicated. And when we want to improve, we don't know where we went wrong because yes, we didn't start with the complete basics. So thank you for reminding us on that. And in the podcast, we discuss achievements published in scientific articles, and we are also trying to reveal what happens behind the scenes of writing and research. And one thing that stands out in the research is that it's never done alone. So we always collaborate with other researchers, technicians in our department or beyond. And how important it is to you to consider these collaborations for your work?
Yeah, I think that collaborations are definitely very important. And I think that this paper is a great example of that. Because at every project, it is almost certainly going to relate to various fields. And one cannot be an expert in all of the fields, unfortunately. So it just really makes sense to improve your research with the knowledge of the experts from other fields. And it's not just the collaboration with the experts regarding their knowledge. It is also that not every laboratory is equipped in the same way. So maybe someone has this very expensive equipment that you don't. So it makes sense to collaborate and get more results. So it just improves science. There
Absolutely.
Should be no jealousy between researchers and wanting to be the only one who does that, when in fact so much more can be done if researchers work together.
Absolutely, I agree. I believe this applies to all other fields as well.
Yeah.
We do more, we can do more together, more heads, have more knowledge, have more ideas. Thank you that you came here today.
Yes, thank you.
Today's guest was Dr. Petra Utrosa, and we encourage you to tune in again next month as we explore fresh insights from a new article.